Hello, and welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and issues that shape the news. On August 12, 2025, the White House sent a formal letter to Smithsonian Secretary Lonnie G. Bunch III. It ordered a comprehensive review of exhibits, educational materials, and even social media posts at eight museums, from the National Museum of American History to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. The goal, according to the letter, was to ensure all content aligns with the President's March executive order to present uplifting and unifying history and to remove divisive or ideologically driven language. This was the next step in a broader push that began years earlier. Back in 2020, the administration's first term saw Executive Order 13950, limiting diversity and bias training in federal agencies, and the release of the 1776 Commission Report, denounced by the American Historical Association as a hack job, not a work of history. Now, in 2025, that commission has been reinstated and given teeth with direct influence over what millions of museum visitors will see or not see. Historians and museum professionals have been quick to respond. The American Historical Association and the Organization of American Historians warned in March that the new directives risk turning public history into ideological litmus tests rather than scholarly interpretation. As one museum scholar put it, history is not a Hallmark card. Supporters in the administration frame this as restoring accuracy and removing political bias from taxpayer-funded exhibits. Critics counter that accuracy here means agreement with the White House's preferred narrative, and that once you give political actors final approval over historical content, independence is the first casualty. This push by the Trump administration reignites a battle cry from the right that demands the nation return to teaching the true history of the United States. But no one is asking some very fundamental questions, the first of which is, what exactly is true history? That leads to another fundamental question, who exactly gets to make that determination? But this argument exposes a much deeper problem, and that is the fundamental lack of understanding about what history is in the first place. As always, this is Alan, your host, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you desire, and grab your thinking caps, because this week's episode is going to deal with much more than the issue at hand. We are going to school on this one and examine history in a way that, frankly, most people have never considered. In short, this is the first day of school, and class is in session. I have stated on numerous podcast episodes and elsewhere that too many people view history like it is a Marvel movie, complete with superheroes and supervillains, and historical figures all can be arranged in camps of either good guys or bad guys. The truth is that human beings are infinitely complex, and since history is really a study of humanity, that complexity makes it impossible for neat and tidy historical narratives to be an honest look at the past. No, history is messy, full of contradictions and nuances. A serious understanding of history, therefore, requires one to embrace that complexity. As an example, I put the following question to you. Which of these statements represents a true look at the Revolutionary War and the formation of the United States? The first is as follows. The Revolution and the birth of the United States is a story of bravery and sacrifice, fought to ensure the liberty and freedom of the colonists, and unshackle them from the tyranny of the British crown, and it changed the world as nations turned away from monarchs and absolute rulers and replaced them with representative governance responsible to the will of the people. Now, for statement number two. The American Revolution was a conflict led by a minority of wealthy and influential rabble-rousers, and the result was disastrous for colonists who obeyed the law and were loyal to the ruling government. Many of those colonists lost their property and possessions and had to flee from the only home they had known and take refuge in foreign lands. Statement 3. The war between the British and those colonists in rebellion sparked a civil war between the individual tribes of the Haudenosaunee, or Iroquois as they are known by many, and the result was their betrayal by both the British and American allies, as those aligned with the British were left to the mercy of the new United States, and those that helped the Patriot cause fight the war found themselves suddenly abandoned by their former ally, only to see the new United States push them off their lands and destroy their culture. Finally, here is statement number 4. The American Revolution and the resulting birth of the United States exposes the hypocrisy of a group that claimed to be fighting for the ideals of liberty and freedom because those same founders enshrined the institution of slavery into the Constitution. Their victory and the resulting independence actually prolonged slavery in what was formerly British North America, as it lasted decades longer than it would have otherwise. So, class, which of those 4 statements is the one that is true? The correct answer is all of them. All of them are true because history is not a sterile list of events. It is not just the what, when, and where. History, and this is important, is also the who, why, how, and the interpretation of all of those things together. The Revolutionary War example should also make something obvious. History can change its focus and narrative, and justifiably so, depending on who is asking the questions and supplying the answers. Every historian and history major knows the work of historian Michel Rolf Trouillot. Arguably the foremost expert on his native Haiti, his greatest influence is his theory about how historical narratives are created, and more to the point, what is left out of them. Trouillot makes the distinction between what happened and that which is said to have happened. History lives in the overlap between those two, but it is in the creation of historical narratives that gaps are created in the record. Trouillot called them silences and states that there are 4 areas of historical production where these silences are created. The first is during research and the collection of sources. The second is in the making of archives from those sources. The third is in the retrieval of facts from those archives and the creation of historical narratives. And the last is in the significance we give to it all. Understand, this is a very short and inadequate explanation on Trouillot, and I urge anyone who really cares about history to read his work, which I will list in the show notes on the Roots of Today blog. For now, let us go back to our example of the U.S. Revolution and make it a little clearer. Our first statement on the revolution deals with the patriotic view, and the one Trump is demanding be the only one. If we base our view on the revolution from speeches, pamphlets, records from the Continental Congress, and memoirs and correspondence from the Founding Fathers, we can create a narrative like the one used in the example. But those were not the only sources on the war. It ignores the sources from the Loyalists, their speeches, their memoirs, in short, their experiences and point of view. It also ignores the sources that support the others. Even worse, when those sources are brought to light, the narratives they give birth to are labeled as insignificant. That begs the question, how can one understand the history of the birth of the United States by silencing their voices? The same is true for the other examples. Who speaks for the Haudenosaunee? Who speaks for the slaves and free blacks? Removing them from the historical narrative leaves an inadequate and incomplete picture, and in doing so, promotes ignorance. But this is exactly what the Trump administration is doing. They are ignoring or silencing all those voices. They have determined that only the patriot voice is important, and in doing so exclaim that they are only preserving the true history of the nation's fight for independence, but an incomplete and sanitized narrative that elevates one approved viewpoint is not history, it's propaganda. There is a precedent that somewhat parallels what the Smithsonian is dealing with in the aftermath of Trump's executive order. Ironically, it has to do with a topic recently covered on this podcast, and that was the use of the atomic bombs and the end of World War II. In 1995, the planned exhibit that was in the works by the Smithsonian created a firestorm of protest, which led to political actors taking advantage to score political points with their supporters. The story is a fascinating one. In the early 1990s, the National Air and Space Museum at the Smithsonian planned a major contextualized exhibition around the B-29 Enola Gay for the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II. The original concept, first titled Crossroads, The End of World War II, The Atomic Bomb and the Origins of the Cold War, then retitled The Last Act, The Atomic Bomb and the End of World War II, sought to put the aircraft within the military, political, and human consequences of the atomic bombings. After drafts of the script leaked in 1994, veterans groups, members of Congress, and some media outlets denounced the show as unpatriotic and revisionist, setting off months of line-by-line revisions and public combat. The first complete script laid out 5 sections: a late war context on the fight to the finish, a policy debate on the decision to drop the bomb, a look at the world's first atomic strike force, the 509 Composite Group, an examination of the devastation of the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki from the ground, and a discussion on the legacy of Hiroshima and Nagasaki as the beginning of the arms race of the Cold War. The concept emphasized multiple perspectives and used photos, veterans' testimony, Japanese sources, and artifacts. They requested loans from Japanese museums, including highly evocative artifacts such as a charred lunchbox and a watch stopped at 8:15, the time of the Hiroshima blast, intending to juxtapose technological achievement with civilian suffering. After outside feedback, Crossroads became the last act in mid-1994. The curatorial team produced successive scripts: May 31, 1994, Draft 2, August 31, 1994, Draft 3, and an October 3, 1994 revision, each seeking more balance while keeping interpretive context. But a storm was just over the horizon. The Air Force Association, AFA, and American Legion led objections, arguing the script foregrounded Japanese victimhood and questioned American motives. AFA analyses of draft texts circulated widely. The American Legion adopted a critical resolution on May 5th of that year. As expected, Congress jumped into the fray. Dozens of members of Congress wrote to the Smithsonian criticizing the planned framing. The House introduced a resolution urging appropriate sensitivity to U.S. veterans. Public hearings were slated for that July. Media coverage amplified the fight. The leaked scripts became national news, and the museum's Tiger Team and outside reviewers pressed for deep changes. By late 1994, the museum was revising text line by line with outside groups. Facing an intensifying political storm, Secretary Arne Michael Hayman announced on January 30th that the last act would be replaced. In his statement, he said the Smithsonian had erred by trying to couple a historical treatment with a 50th anniversary commemoration, and he promised a later public forum to discuss museums and difficult history. NASM director Martin Harwit resigned on May 2nd. With the interpretive show canceled, many human impact materials slated for the last act appeared instead in a complimentary exhibition at American University, Constructing a Peaceful World Beyond Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which opened July 9th of that year with relatively little controversy. As for the Smithsonian's planned exhibit, on June 28th, the National Air and Space Museum opened a compact exhibition titled Enola Gay. It displayed the forward fuselage, plus a few components, a full-scale replica of Little Boy, brief labels, restoration notes, and a short video of crew recollections. Reviewers noted the museum had focused on the hardware, not the nuances of history. The show drew enormous crowds, nearly 4 million visitors, before it closed nearly 3 years later on May 18, 1998. Historians were appalled. In the Journal of American History, Richard H. Cohn, military historian and professor at the University of North Carolina, called the cancellation a tragedy for public history, reconstructing the sequence of curatorial choices, political interventions, and script revisions. He argued the Smithsonian's leadership abandoned a rare opportunity to educate a mass audience about a defining event. In an op-ed printed in the San Francisco Gate, Professor Emeritus of History at Stanford University Barton J. Bernstein criticized the surrender to political pressure and warned that a fuselage-centric display would short-circuit public discussion of the bomb decision and its human cost. Otto Mayer, a former Smithsonian official, described a fiasco born of governance failures and external lobbying that narrowed museums' room to interpret contentious history. And Stanley Goldberg, who resigned from the advisory board, decried what he saw as political interference and McCarthyism. The original The Last Act script offered a robust, context-rich narrative, juxtaposing strategic motivations, civilian suffering, atomic legacies, and visual storytelling. After backlash and public scrutiny, the displayed version shifted to a hardware and restoration-focused exhibit, stripping away nearly all interpretive content. The visitor experience became one of admiration for aviation history and technical skill, rather than grappling with moral, human, or geopolitical complexity. 30 years have passed since the fiasco that befell the curators of the Smithsonian's Enola Gay exhibit in 1995. Yet, here we are fighting the same fight for the same reason. Just to recap, on January 29th of this year, a new executive order reestablished the 1776 Commission at the Department of Education. It was followed on March 27th with a second order restoring truth and sanity to American history, which set policy to make federal historical sites and museums present uplifting narratives and to remove improper ideology. This month, the White House sent a formal letter to Smithsonian Secretary Lonnie G. Bunch announcing a comprehensive review of 8 museums' exhibit text, educational content, and digital materials to ensure alignment with the president's directives, emphasizing American exceptionalism and removal of divisive or ideologically driven language. Major outlets reported a 120-day timetable for content correction. The Smithsonian replied it would engage constructively while remaining committed to scholarly factual history. As this review was announced, the National Museum of American History drew scrutiny for removing references to Donald Trump's 2 impeachments from a display. The institution said those references would be restored in an updated panel. Critics read the changes as part of a larger pressure campaign. With this latest directive, the White House asked the Smithsonian to conduct an internal content audit, submit exhibit scripts, label copy, plans for future shows, educational materials, and social media content within 30 days and implement revisions within 120 days. Early targets included the National Museum of American History, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, Air and Space, and the National Portrait Gallery, as the order set standards that all exhibits should be unifying, uplifting, and accurate, as defined by the White House, with language deemed divisive or ideological removed. Publicly, the institution emphasized scholarly rigor, factual accuracy, and independence, and said it would review the White House letter with this commitment in mind. The Smithsonian is federally funded and overseen by a Board of Regents, but it has long asserted curatorial autonomy. The American Historical Association and the Organization of American Historians have both criticized new patriotic education orders for mischaracterizing U.S. history education and justifying unprecedented federal interventions. In March, the AHA issued a statement defending the Smithsonian against the executive order's misrepresentations. Historians and museum professionals warned that politicized vetting risks replacing interpretation with ideological litmus tests. Once political approval becomes the standard, warns the AHA, curatorial independence is the first casualty. But the worst aspect to this new push for an ideological purity test for the dissemination of history is that it promotes ignorance. If the adage about people who fail to learn the lessons of history has any ring of truth to it, then why would any sane country make it national policy to prevent exposure to the lessons of history? There is already so much history that is ignored or shut out or deemed unnecessary, and we accept this every day. If we make it policy to exclude the narratives of the history of the United States that Trump and those who think like him find uncomfortable or unimportant, then what does that say for history that is truly ignored and underrepresented? Currently, this country pretends that history began when Columbus landed in the Caribbean in 1492. The history of the indigenous peoples of the Americas goes back well over 100 centuries before Columbus's arrival. However, in the current political climate, that is just another inconvenient fact, one to be brushed aside and forgotten because it does not support the uplifting view of history that comes with the Trump stamp of approval. The history of the United States is rich and compelling. Much of it is uplifting. Much of it is dark and tragic. Like a coin, you cannot have one side without the other. The dark is just as important as the light. The United States should not try to hide from the horrors of the slave trade or the displacement and near extermination of Native peoples. If we are going to celebrate the battles of Saratoga, Trenton, and Yorktown, then we must also acknowledge the Trail of Tears and the massacres of Sand Creek and Wounded Knee. You cannot understand the civil rights movement without acknowledging the horrors of chattel slavery or lacking awareness of Dred Scott, Jim Crow, and the Tulsa Race Massacre. Comprehension requires knowledge. The president is promoting ignorance and calling it patriotic. We are on the wrong path, and it doesn't lead to the right history. It leads to useless propaganda. We must do better, and we can. We must embrace the complexity of history. We must continue to expand the historical record to include the voices of those who, until now, have remained silent. History is a study of humanity, and one that sparks a healthy and necessary debate. That debate should continue unimpeded. That concludes this week's episode. If you find this podcast informative or entertaining, please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. The same goes if you tune in on YouTube. Also, if you have anything you would like to add to the conversation, or if there is a topic you would like to see covered on this show, please leave a comment. Until next time, remember this: get informed and fight to keep your political representatives accountable. Your freedom depends on it.